Hey everyone, welcome back to part two with this interview series we're doing with Rick Ferry. Rick Ferry has written seven books, literally wrote the book on ETFs. He is a figure in the Boglehead movement and really is continuing the great work that Jack Bogle, the father of index fund investing, really piloted and carrying this torch. A lot of our own investing philosophy is derived from the work that he has done, and very excited to continue this conversation. You know, just recently we talked with him about his backstory in an episode called Escape from Wall Street. And in that episode, we were taking a look at the assets under management industry. We were taking a look at assets under management fees in particular, and really having a frank conversation about, is there a guy, is there a person that can consistently beat the market over time? Rick's aha moment led him to say, no, there really isn't, and created a very interesting model where he offered investment management, but did so just using index funds. Fascinating conversation. So check that episode out if you haven't already. In this one, we're going to be talking about asset allocation, and we're doing so in through the lens of making a cake with icing and sprinkles and candles. But even more importantly, we're going to be talking about the role of stocks versus bonds, international funds, factor investing, getting Rick Ferry's own perspective on this. Do you need to put extra weight into small cap value? And, you know, what role does that play in your final results? So I think this is a great chance for us to look at the power of index fund investing and do so through the lens of this most recent bear market that we're experiencing in March of 2020, as we're all dealing with COVID-19 and the fallout on the economy from that. What a great opportunity to have this conversation. I know it worked then, but what about now? So anyways, welcome to Choose FI. So Rick, I want to hop right into this. And here's the frame for this, for how I want to set this up. We have been so fortunate to be able to talk with J.L. Collins, author of The Simple Path to Wealth, basically advocates for a one or two fund strategy, depending on where you are. It's basically just VTI or VTSAX, same thing, essentially, mutual fund versus ETF, and then blending that with a total bond fund. If we were to then take one extra step and kind of look at the Bogleheads three fund portfolio, it's very similar to that, but it adds in an international aspect as well. Very, very simple. And then you look at Paul Merriman, who advocates for the ultimate buy and hold portfolio, which basically says, you know, the prior two models are going to be cap weighted, meaning they're basically just going to reflect the S&P 500 with a little bit of diversity, but you really want to be equally weighted among the various asset classes or styles, and it's going to place extra emphasis on small cap and value specifically. And although that adds a layer of complexity, the thought is that over the long term, academic studies show that you're going to increase your return with minimal extra risk to the tune of maybe two additional percentage points. So there's a lot there, but what I was hoping to do is just kind of like take a step back and kind of get your perspective on this, the trade-off between simplicity, complexity, cost, risk. You know, where do you weigh in on this? And someone that hasn't pot committed to any of these, you know, approaches at this point, what should their perspective be?
Well, you have to think about it as a birthday cake. I guess the best way to think about it. The layers of the cake are your asset classes. So you have stocks, which are the growth asset class, and you have fixed income, which is your not growth asset class, but sort of your steady eddy, lower volatility type asset class. And then you have cash, which is what your emergency money should be in, you know, things that you're going to need in the near future, or you might put some money aside. So those are the three layers of the cake. How you allocate between stocks, bonds, and CDs can be included in bonds, by the way, and cash is 90% of the cake, the weight of the cake. I mean, that is the cake, okay? And so your biggest decision that you have to make, and the most important decision you have to make as a long-term investor, is what percentage is in stocks, what percentage is in fixed income, and how much you're going to leave on the side in cash. That by far is the biggest decision that you make. The second big decision that you make is now, how are you going to invest in stocks? How are you going to invest in bonds, and how are you going to do the cash? Well, let's leave the cash aside and just say you're going to leave it in a money market. Look at the stocks and the bonds. And the easiest way to do that is through a broad market index fund that captures all of the stocks and captures all of the bonds. So a total U.S. stock market index fund, or maybe a total world index fund that captures both the U.S. and the international markets combined into one fund, a total world fund. And then on the bond side, you could use a total bond market index fund, or you could use a combination of CDs and a total bond market fund, or something very simple like that. Now, that then is now 95% of the work that you have to do. So what's the last 5%? Well, the last 5% is the icing on the cake. And that is where you get to, well, do I want to have small cap value? Do I want to have maybe some real estate on top of all of this? Do I want to have maybe some a little bit more emerging markets? Do I want to have some more technology? And then you have the candles. And the candles are the very bright things that people focus on at a birthday party. It's the cake comes out with the candles lit and everybody goes, ooh, ah, look at that. They're not looking at the cake. I mean, you know, what's inside it. They're looking at the candles. And unfortunately, that's how a lot of people invest. They invest in candles as opposed to investing in cake, right? Which in the candles are your one-off kind of speculative things that you might do. Maybe you might buy some Apple or this or that or the other, or you're going to really speculate on something. You know, energy stocks are way down, so you're going to buy a little bit of an energy stock ETF. I mean, that's the candle. It's the glow. It's you're not going to keep it. So you got the cake, which is the asset allocation of index funds. You got the icing on the cake, which are your factors and your sort of your sectors. And then you got the candles. And people focus on the candles rather than focusing on the cake. So you focus on the cake.
Fantastic. Love the cake. Beautiful cake. Great candles. All love it. Love it. All the great things. I want to talk a little bit about the factors. And specifically, I want to focus on small cap value, because coming from kind of a J.L. Collins Simple Path to Wealth, and really even a Bogleheads, just get stocks and bonds. Figure out your ratio. Done. That's it. And then and talking about it from the perspective of Paul Merriman, advocating for small cap and value and making sure that's represented. Basically, that the case that was being made, as I understood it, was that when you, let's just say we're talking about a total stock market index fund. We're talking about every publicly traded company inside the United States. We're talking about 3,500 some odd companies. The vast majority of your holdings is, because it's cap weighted, is in these massive behemoth companies. It basically it represents the S&P 500 plus a few others. That, and now Paul is saying you're not as diversified as you think you are. And so really what we want to do is we want to own all of them, all the asset classes. We want to make sure small cap and value and international, everything's represented. We want to expand and we want to own those equally as opposed to cap weighted. Now, I was very intrigued by that. And I actually set up candles. Well, not even candles. We said it's icing, right? We said it's icing.
It's icing. We'll call that icing.
So the total stock market
with
and
sprinkles,
the
sprinkles on the icing.
Sprinkles, baby, sprinkles.
Jonathan likes his shiny sprinkles.
Gosh, such a sweet tooth.
So I had Paul Merriman on my show a couple of months ago. Paul is a great guy. He's a sweetheart. And really is a nice guy. We disagreed on what he's calling an asset class. I said, Paul, I mean, I don't call a small cap value an asset class. It's already part of the total market. It's equity. I don't call large cap growth an asset class. I said, there's sectors of the market, or there's styles within a market. If you own the total market, you own small cap value. You own large cap growth. You own it all. You know, to call it a separate asset class infers that it's not in the market. Now, what you're doing when you do this, Jonathan, is you're overweighting your portfolio to that sector of the market. And that's perfectly fine if you're willing to take that risk. And there is more risk there. There is risk to overweighting away from the market and overweighting to a sector of the market, whether it be an industry or whether it be a style like small cap value. And quite frankly, they are related. Industries and styles are related. So, you know, if you want to overweight there, then you're taking the risk that you're going to underperform the market. And here's where the problem comes in. Now, Paul Merriman told me this story. He went to see Jack Bogle, and he explained to Jack Bogle his entire slice and dice approach, the ultimate buy and hold 10 fund portfolio. Okay. What did Jack Bogle tell Paul Merriman? He said, Paul, the problem with that is that investors won't keep up with it during periods of time when it doesn't work. And he's right. That strategy has not worked in 10 years. Now, not to say it won't work. I'm not saying that at all. You are taking more risk, and you have the hope and the right, if you will, or you have to earn, as my friend Wes Graywood told me. Wes is a small cap value manager, that you have to earn your return here, which means if you're going to go down the path that you have gone down and that Paul Merriman goes down, which is to own small cap value, overweight small cap value in a portfolio, there are going to be long, long periods of time when it underperforms. And when it does, are you going to stick with it? And are you going to reallocate and rebalance to it? Because if you're not, then don't do it from the beginning. So my view on the icing on the cake is simply, if you want to have a different flavor than plain vanilla, or you want to have any icing at all, you better love that icing, because you're going to be eating that icing for 25 years. And they're going to be, sometimes you're going to get so sick of that icing that you're going to want to spit it out. You can't. You have to stay with it basically for at least 25 years. It is a lifelong investment strategy. And that's very difficult for people to do. It's much easier for them to just hold the market and say, well, I'm down 10% because the market's down 10%. That's easy. But to say I'm down 15% because of this small cap value thing and the rest of the market is up, maybe, now that's not so easy to take. And a lot of people capitulate at the wrong time, like right now. So this is the issue.
That hits the nail on the head so much. I want to spend just a little bit more time here just because. So what Paul Merriman is saying is over any 30 or 40 year window, small cap value has carried the charge. But if you look over the last 10, small cap has lagged to a cap weighted S&P 500 style, whatever, has lagged the market for the last 10 years. So basically, put this in perspective, my entire investing horizon, small cap value has done less than like a VTSAX approach. And if you ever begin to doubt that, oh, wow, this will never outperform and you give up halfway through, then this was the, so you need to have faith, and you need to have faith for a very long period of time, an investing timeline. So I think you hit the nail on the head. It's not to say that it won't be right, but we just have no idea. We won't know until you need the money, whether or not you made the right choice.
you need to marry this idea, marry it, because that's what it is.
Yeah, it's always struck me that this overweighting of whatever we're talking about, small cap value in this particular case, it just seems like stock picking. And I don't necessarily think any of our listeners or me, certainly, we have the expertise to figure that out. Like it just seems like a complicated way of stock picking. So, I mean, I'd like to take a step back and go to the three fund strategy, or just more generally what you actually advise. So you said before, we're talking about a lifelong horizon, right? A 25 to potentially 50 plus year horizon. And I'd like you to talk about, like, what are the considerations that you advise people, or are there considerations, or is it just one size fits all between equities and bonds, and what percentage to put in? You know, is it age? Is it your investing horizon? Are there other considerations? Like, really talk people through, because this is where the rubber hits the road, right? Like, this is what people need to walk away from this conversation with, of how do you actually advise?
Great question. So there are these rules of thumb out there. Your age in bonds. As you're young, you should have more in stocks. As you get older, you should have more in bonds. Please throw those away. Throw it in the trash. Cover your ears. It has nothing to do with how much you should have in stocks and how much you should have in bonds. This is such an individual decision based on many different things. I have clients who are multimillionaires in their early 30s who won't have more than 30% in stocks. And I have clients who are multimillionaires in their 80s and won't have one dime of bonds. Taking the middle of the road on this doesn't work. You know, to make broad generalities about everybody means everybody has the same job, the same income, lives in the same house on the same street, has the same, you know, 1.7% children, or everybody's exactly the same. Therefore, their allocation should be exactly the same. The problem is nobody is the same. Let me explain for a second the difference between philosophy and strategy. Philosophy is the belief in low-cost index investing. If I'm going to be in the markets, I should use total bond market or total stock market. I should just be low-cost. Don't try to pick individual securities. Don't try to time the market. Just be in these simple index funds. That's the philosophy. I mean, all the bogleheads have the same philosophy. But if I ask a group of bogleheads at a conference, and I do this every year when we have our boglehead conference, how many here believe in that philosophy? Everybody in the room raises their hands. I mean, they're bogleheads. Then I ask this question, how many people in this room have the exact same strategy, the exact same portfolio with the exact same funds as somebody else in this room? Nobody raises their hands. And why? Because everybody in that room is different. So what I might have is my asset allocation between stocks and bonds is based on what I need, my willingness to take risk, whether I can handle the risk or not, whether I should take it, how much money I have, how much I'm making, whether it's a taxable account or a non-taxable account. Whether you should have the same allocation to stocks is a completely different conversation. It's really irrelevant what I'm doing. What you should be doing is what you should be doing. So strategy is very personal to you. And kind of following these rules of thumb, I have to tell people all the time, stop and think. I didn't ask you what you read. I didn't ask you what you think other people think your asset allocation should be. I asked you, what do you think your asset allocation should be between stocks and bonds, ignoring everyone else? Where do you come in and why? That's how I get to somebody's asset allocation. Believe it or not, as oddly as that is, but I've been doing this a long, long time. And I know that if you decide what your asset allocation should be between stocks and bonds, rather than me or some computer or asking four questions online and coming up with some asset allocation, if you tell me where you think you should be and why, and you're able to articulate it to me, that there's a much higher probability that you're going to maintain that asset allocation in a down market because you came up with it from your heart. And that's what's really difficult about advising, is getting that information from people, bringing it out. I need to bring it out from you, because if I bring it out from you and it's your idea, then it's a much higher probability you're going to stick with it. I hope I answered your question.
I think you did. I guess I'm curious. So we're talking about this strategy, right? And you're saying it is very personal, but for the DIYer out there, which again is what most of our listeners are, how would you advise them to think through what that personalized strategy would be? You know, I'm putting myself in the shoes of a listener and saying, like, I don't know anything about investing. I don't know what my strategy should be. How do I even arrive at it? Like, what do I have to research? What do I need to think about? Like, you know, you're the expert in this. Like, even just pointing them in the direction of some articles, like, where would someone even start to get that strategy for themselves?
All you're really trying to do is, again, figure out what percentages are going to be in each of the layers of the cake. And remember the layers of the cake. There's the equities percentage. There's the fixed income or relatively safe percentage. And then there's your cash. That's what you're trying to get to. How much you should have in equity, how much you should have in fixed income, if any, how much you should have in cash. So you concentrate on that. The rest of the stuff, as far as what index funds you should use, whether you should use a Vanguard total stock market or the Schwab total stock market or whatever, that's less relevant. You need to concentrate on the one 90% thing that matters. How much can you handle in a down market? The market went down 30 some odd percent in 3 weeks. Boom. How did you feel about that? Now, nobody felt good about losing that money, but what did you do? What did you want to do? And, you know, a lot of people wanted to have gotten out 3 weeks earlier. Well, great, just that we didn't know, right? But now that we're down, what are you going to do? Are you going to follow your own investment policy that you put together when times were more sane than they are now? And you can't put together an investment policy today when the markets are volatile like this, because you're not thinking clearly unfortunately, you needed to have an investment policy before this all began. And then you go to your investment policy and you say, well, what did I say when I was more sane? What should I do? And the investment policy should have said, I'm going to stay the course. I'm going to rebalance. I'm going to put more money into stocks. I'm going to take some money out of bonds. Okay. Starting with whatever the asset allocation was that you, when you were sane, when the markets weren't crazy, but you were a rational person, then what investment policy that you came up with, you go back and you follow that at its simplest level. I'm not going to panic. I'm going to rebalance. I'm going to continue, stay the course. Realize for young people, not people who are my age, 62, 65, who are retiring, but I'm talking about people who are in their 30s and 40s. This is a fabulous opportunity to follow your strategy. I'm not saying put more money in the market, but follow your strategy. Do a rebalancing in that 401k. You're going to be, I'm so glad I'm buying the stock market. I'm glad I'm buying stocks. Stocks are falling off a cliff, but you know what? That's the best thing that can happen to you right now. And you have to believe that. You have to think that way. This is not a sprint. It is a long-term marathon. So how much can you handle on the downside before you capitulate? That is the number one thing you have to consider. And then at some point, you have enough money. You could take less risk only because you have enough money, you've made your number, you've hit financial independence, and you could now deleverage your portfolio a little bit if you choose to. Again, I hope I'm hitting on some points.
No, I think you're doing really good. I want to give you the opportunity to kind of dial in with a little bit with like an individual here as opposed to, you know, just this theoretical person. So we'll just throw this idea out there. You have this individual, relatively young, early in their investing timeline, got their first real job in this theoretical, hypothetical case. If individuals out there, you know, we don't know what's going to happen with the economy with their job. But let's say for this individual, they have a job that looks like it's recession-proof. They have more work than ever right now. They have their emergency fund in place. And maybe for whatever reason, this will add a cool little nuance to it. They actually have a lump sum of money outside of their emergency fund. They have $30,000 outside of their emergency fund. And they, just like you, said, wow, buying opportunity. So Rick Ferry, is this person lump sum investing, or are they taking nibbles at the perimeters, buying it as it goes down and as it goes up?
Depends on the individual. Again, it's a one-on-one conversation, but it's going to be, what would make you feel better? What would make you do it? We want to get into the market. Right? There's no doubt. If you're going to take the $30,000, all the money you have in the world, aside from the emergency money, and you're going to plump it in the market, what if you lost 50%? Would you pull out? And now you've damaged yourself for the rest of your life, you know, by doing that because of that $15,000 loss. If you're not going to stick with it, because you've lost 50%, then you put in it over time. You do your dollar cost averaging to get in. You put in 5,000 now, you put in 5,000 in another month, 5,000 in a, you know, 2 months from now, and so forth. I wish I had a one size fits all answer, but remember that those rules of thumb, those one size fits all don't work. Now, the mathematical answer is to put it all in, because that normally works out the best mathematically. But there's two sides to the coin. There's the technical side, and there's the emotional side. Emotionally, it might be the worst decision. And I can't answer that for you or any given individual unless I have actual conversation with them, one-on-one. Give them all the numbers. I can give them all the data. I'm saying, well, if you put it all in, things it'll work out, and you'll be really happy you did at some point. But it won't work out if they put it all in and the market goes down 50% and they sell. I would have damaged them for life. So you have to look at each individually emotionally, and what are they capable of handling? And so therefore, what would the best strategy for them be? All right. Sorry, I'm not answering your question.
No, that was fine. That was fine.
Rick, it's great. I mean, I think what you're saying is, like, you need to understand the mental and behavioral aspect of this.
Absolutely.
Maybe more so than just about anything, right? So, like, you know,
investing is easy. It really is. Investing is easy. Okay. Figuring out yourself is the hard part. Right. Investing is the easy part. The math is there. Even Jonathan, with your small cap value approach, the math is there. It's easy. Oh, yeah, you just go ahead and take an allocation to small cap value. How much? Maybe 30% of your total equity portfolio. Okay, I mean, it's there, all right? But emotionally, is it going to work out for you? That's the real question. That's what people have to concentrate on. So that's what I try to talk with people about. And I try to, as much as I can, on the Bogleheads and various other ways, try to bring it out. That's the hard part.
So, Rick, it's essentially a sliding scale of math versus psychological safety and security, right? So you're saying like the math would suggest put all the money in at once, but psychological, if you can't handle that, then maybe dollar cost average. The math may suggest to err more on the side of equities. And I don't want to put a number in anyone's head, certainly, but if that is not going to help you sleep at night, then you might slide more towards a higher percentage in bonds than, you know, maybe someone else would. Am I hearing you right? Like, is that really how people need to think about this?
Yes, exactly. John Bogle said it a long time ago, stay the course. What was he saying there is, you know, it doesn't matter if you're 50% stocks or you're 100% stocks. If you're 50% stocks and you cannot stay the course because the markets are volatile and you jump out, you have not done yourself any favors. You're better off being 30% in stocks or 25% in stocks. If you're 100% in stocks and you could stay the course, well, that's where you should be. The bottom line of this whole thing, can you stay the course with your portfolio? If you can, then it's the right portfolio for you. If you can't and you're not, you need to dial down the risk from the beginning.
Stay the course. It's a great final word. Rick, if someone's listening to this and they want to follow more of your work, they want to find out what you're doing, what is the best way for someone to find you and connect with you and your content?
So I have a website, rickferry.com. I'm also on Twitter, Rick_Ferry. I'm also hanging out at bogleheads.org. I also do the podcast, the Bogleheads on Investing podcast, once a month. And I think that's probably enough.
and Rick, just for clarification out there, your last name is spelled F-E-R-R-I.
That is correct. Ferry, like a ferry boat with an I.
Rick, thank you so much for joining us on the show. This has been a pleasure.
Thank you. I hope I've been helpful.
Absolutely. And to our audience, if you got value from today's episode, and if you've been getting value from the episodes up to this point, just take 1 second, press the subscribe button on the platform you're listening to this on. Just let the provider know you're getting value from the show. You want to be here when we produce additional content. Maybe you're listening to this show because you realize what you've been doing this entire time won't cut it. You're trying to now get started on your path to financial independence, start building some financial resiliency for yourself and for your family. Do this today. Go to choosefi.com/start. We've created a landing page there. It is the easiest way for you to figure out how to dive into our content and get started on your own path to financial independence. All right, my friends, we'll see you next time as we continue to go down the road less traveled.